Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Press Start podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, James, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Brady.
Hello.
Ewan.
Hello.
And Shannon.
Hello.
Hello to you all. So this show started off pretty tragic, but we think we've whipped it up into something a bit better. So today we're going to be talking about the new Nintendo console and its supposed delay, a deep and penetrating reflection on the state of PlayStation VR2. Yeah. I'm going to host the whole podcast in that accent. The first hot and juicy details about the future of Assassin's Creed, a restructuring of one of my favorite studios, and something about Pokemon Day, I guess. But first, let's not talk about anything in particular, because we don't have that on the plan. So let's just jump straight into Nintendo news. A report has come out this week that says that the Nintendo Switch has supposedly been delayed to 2025. I think the assumption was it was going to be coming this year. Probably worth like clarifying, I don't think anything was like officially announced.
No.
So like we're all kind of speculating. But the rumors are that it was to help with supply, but also to help the developers, I guess, build up like a good range of launch games. So Shannon, I'm going to go to you first, because I was complaining about this today to you, and I said there's now literally nothing to look forward to this year. Do you think that's true? What does this year look like without new Nintendo hardware?
Yeah, it's going to be a weird one, given PlayStation have said they're not going to have any sort of big tentpole franchises, releases from franchises that we know of. And Nintendo, like, even console aside, we don't really know of anything after, like, March or April. Not that this year's been crazy for them. So it's a hard one. Like, right at this second, I can't think of anything major that isn't, like, obviously Call of Duty or FIFA or whatever that we'll be playing from like June, July onwards. Obviously, we're recording this before the Pokemon Presents. It's only a short 10-minute stream, so I was pretty confident we were going to see a new Pokemon game. But now I don't know, seeing that time frame. But I guess by the time this goes live, I'll be right or wrong either way. So I really, it's going to be a weird year, which we always thought this year might be the one where, like, because like last year and the year before felt like COVID delayed stuff, like all coming out. We always sort of knew that this year and maybe even next would probably be a bit lighter. But if Nintendo don't release their console this year, which is feeling likely, that is just, it's nuts to me in its own right. But then it also feels like it's going to be a quiet holiday.
I'm hoping by nature of it being a quieter year for Nintendo, and I suppose like a quiet year for PlayStation as well, which maybe isn't too unexpected given just like how many bangers came out late last year. But I'm hoping by Nintendo having a quiet year, it means that they're kind of saving all of their kind of batch of games for the launch lineup of the next Switch. Which, yeah, I think like if this is the last year of the Switch, then that's kind of forgivable, assuming they come out with a bunch of bangers when the next one drops.
I think my opinion about it is I was kind of feeling like with the slew of games announced so far that maybe they were already holding back a lot of better games for the new console. But yeah, like I don't know now, like it kind of surprises me a bit, unless they want to get maybe more third parties on board or something like that, or, yeah.
They've sold enough Switches now as well that there's enough third party games out there to kind of support it, I think. Like, I'm still playing Prince of Persia on my Switch and loving that, and I was pleased to see that get added content announced for it, as well. I imagine some of that we'll see later this year too. So I'd like, maybe there's kind of enough to go on for this year. I know it's exciting to have things, new shiny games to play, but
yeah,
if it is in fact the last year, maybe it doesn't really need it and third party is enough.
I think it's secondary to, because I do think back to the Switch and how big of a deal that was. And like, I don't think it was ever sold out from memory. Like, I'm fairly sure you could walk into a store and get one on launch day, or like it definitely wasn't what we saw with PS5 and Xbox. So I do probably think that is like first and foremost, like they don't want to launch and then have it sold out for months, because I just think that Nintendo like would be very conscious of like having it available and families like being able to go in and grab it. And if you don't have stock ready at Christmas, like that's not a good time to launch a console than having them like go to the Switch or going to get a PlayStation or Xbox. So I do think the software is secondary. Like they're obviously probably happy they'll have a few more months to get stuff ready and get third parties on board. But yeah, I feel like that's what it's about. I just don't, I don't really understand when we've been having this conversation for 3 or 4 years, like, and it's not using like state of the art tech as far as we know, like how that can be a problem. But here we are.
Do you guys not think that there's a slight possibility that they might still hold something for like holiday this year that then becomes sort of cross-gen as well? Like, because they have sort of done that in the past. Like, yeah. I guess Zelda to a degree was a cross-gen title, but yeah. I guess it obviously depends on how they handle backwards compatibility with the next Switch.
I thought like Mario Odyssey 2, but then again, like you need big software to launch like something like Zelda. Like, I don't know if Metroid has the pull of a Zelda, Pokemon, or a Mario. Like, and I do think that's going to be their big like 4K launch title. So it's a tricky one. And again, I think we've spoken about it a heap, but they'd be worried. Like, it's not a slam dunk for them. Like, it never has been for some reason moving people to another generation of consoles. So they must have something for holiday, because like Ewan touched on, there's 150 million Switches sold or something. So you're not going to just have nothing for the holiday period when you can move 30 million of a game.
I wonder if they'll expand the list of older games that are like accessible through the online thing. I'm blanking on what it's called in this moment, but
Nintendo Switch Online.
Yeah, Nintendo Switch Online. I should have figured that out, really.
So creative.
Maybe if they like expand to that roster of games, that's kind of enough to help like tide people over, particularly if there's some kind of bigger cult classics in the mix there. But yeah, it still feels lesser, doesn't it? Regardless.
I think it'll be fine if the other rumors are true that there's backwards compatibility with some improvements and such. You know, like at least then if everyone buys games throughout the year, they can jump into the new one with something else.
Yeah, and they can charge $10 for an upgrade or something like that for each of those games.
I still can't see. I don't know if Nintendo will do that though. I can't see Nintendo charging for upgrades. Like personally, I feel like they've always been very.
I feel like they love to charge for things multiple times.
Yeah, I don't want to go on this path, but I struggle to see what a Nintendo slate will look like without that in some capacity.
I feel like you need a Mario or a Zelda game.
Oh, I see what you mean.
And if you do Odyssey 2 ahead of the launch of that console, it doesn't feel like a launch title anymore. It becomes more of a footnote, like, oh, and Mario Odyssey 2 is getting support on the new console.
I think rather than being the headline. I don't even care that it's not coming out till March, but I just like want to know what it is and like what that looks like and all of these questions sort of answered. We've just been waiting so long. Like I just want, and they've sold enough Switches, like they're not going to sell 30 million this year. Like I just want them to start teasing some stuff and giving us some info on it. So I hope that still happens this year.
I think we're going to announce this year for sure. Surely. Right. They'd have to start manufacturing at some point this year. They'd have to announce to get in front of all the leaks and shit.
True. Yeah, it's very true.
Like,
how did it work last time? What sort of, I feel like it was a March release,
very last minute. It was like November, January.
Okay, so it was before
like announced
Christmas.
In November, and then like there was a trailer in Jan, I think, that weird trailer where everyone took their Switch to their party, and then
classic.
And they... that was the November one, and then Jen was that Japanese reveal, the press conference. And
oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right.
Right. I don't know if anyone can remember, but like if something is announced before Christmas, do people go like in the lead up to Christmas and start asking about the new console? And the poor EB Games employee has to go, oh, it's not actually out yet. It's out in March. And then go, oh, well, what am I going to get for Christmas?
I would argue if it's just an online reveal, that's a different world. You know,
different world. Okay.
And I think Nintendo might even, like with PlayStation, they did the Black Friday deal to clear out the old ones just before the Slim came out. Do you know what I mean? So people might get a cheap old Switch. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I'm excited. I hope so. I'm still excited. It just feels so much further now. Like, it doesn't feel like a near distant future thing.
Yeah. The report this past week was that it was going to have a bigger screen, and that excites me because the one thing I've really noticed having bounce between my PlayStation Portal and my Switch in the last kind of couple of weeks. It's just how small that screen feels. And granted, I'm still in like the original model Switch. I didn't get the OLED. Yeah, I feel like I'm very much in need of an upgrade. I'd gladly take a Switch 2 at this point in time.
You know what else you need, Ewan?
Uh-huh.
A VR 2. Because everyone else
that's on its last legs.
Yeah, speaking of... we need a new one already. In a recent PlayStation blog post, Sony has revealed that they've have plans to add support for PC to its previously flagship VR headset at some point this year. So... guys, do we think this is a good thing or a bad thing? Like, how do you think this will impact sales with the PSVR 2? Do you think it'll do any better?
I don't know. I feel like there's better alternatives on the PC already, so and probably cheaper alternatives. So
I was going to say, like, price-wise, how does it compare to everything? This is, like, kind of a shadow tech time with Shannon segment, I feel like.
I would like to think you can get a comparable Meta for cheaper.
Nah, I think the VR2 is still good controller wise and like eye tracking and resolution. Like, it still pips the Quest 3. Like, whether you'd still just go a Quest 3 just because you can take it portably, like and has mixed reality, like that's a whole other thing. But I think if you're like deep into VR2 and want a good experience, like it will be a good option. I don't think it's gonna move the dial all that much though. To be honest, I just think VR has had its day. Like, I'm sure the Meta Quest 3 is also just not doing as well as the Quest 2 did. I don't know.
It kind of is comparable on price point, isn't it? The VR2 and the Meta Quest. What is it, like, 120 gig Meta Quest unit is like $800 on Amazon. And yeah, PSVR 880. Yeah, so super similar. It's actually cheaper. Super similar. Yeah, I've got a Quest 2 and I haven't felt the need to upgrade. I feel like I'm kind of at the point that until there's like some like kind of must play sort of games that aren't just like a must play for those that have a VR headset, but are a must play for everyone. I don't feel like we've quite crossed that threshold. Like, a VR game, to my knowledge, hasn't been up for Game of the Year. Maybe Half-Life Alyx was? That's the kind of caliber I'm sort of talking.
Like, Assassin's Creed and Asgard's Wrath 2. Like, there are a lot of them, but I don't know. I just feel like they're still
But aren't
gimmicky.
These great games for, like, VR games as opposed to,
But that's
to,
what
like...
I mean. Like, they feel like VR game. Like, they don't feel like full... They're, like, 80-hour games. Like, they're long games, but it just feels... Yeah.
It doesn't feel like quite so premium the experience, which is weird because it's very much very premium experience. But yeah, it's not like you're not getting like a God of War-esque kind of game on VR just to pull a random top quality game out of my head. The other thing I was going to say is like I feel like the technology has a way to go to in order to like be more a comfortable experience. Like, when I get home after a long day at work, I don't want to strap on a big piece of plastic onto my head.
Wow.
It's a shame.
I'd much rather just like sit on my couch and be lazy and sit in front of a big TV. Like,
absolutely.
I don't want to be kind of up and about with plastic strap-ons.
Plastic
strap-ons,
all up
you know?
In you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Like, they're going to sell more of them. And, like, obviously, the more people that buy them, the more games there will be for VR and PlayStation VR 2. Like, it can't be a bad thing. That
if anything, it expands the library for people who have one, seeing as Sony aren't doing much to expand it for them. So,
yeah. I think it probably does ease some of the pressure on PlayStation. But still, like, they need to... If they want their technology to succeed, they've got to bring out banging games.
Watch this space.
I think, I think that's the problem. And I think they've also been pretty open with how... Well, no, they haven't been open because it leaked. But how the development issues are going for their big, like, AAA games, like, on PS5, right? So, like, how do you kind of expect them to also bring out some, like, really quality VR experiences? And I don't know if this is going to help anything. I mean, I think you might attract some really good indies and stuff to the platform by doing, like, opening up to PC and stuff. But
nobody wants that either though. Like, no one, like, as much as I would love more PlayStation VR 2 games from PlayStation. Like, I don't want that instead of, like, anything
else. Oh, yeah, no. I, obviously not. No, I'm not, and I'm not saying that.
No, I'm not saying but you like, do, but I'm just saying, like, yeah. I don't get it.
I think it's, like, good, like, to go back to Resident Evil, as I always do. Like, I feel like those games, though, are good examples of where...
Totally.
Yeah, like, that's a full game that is only made better by VR. So, like, if they start throwing around some... As we know, they did throw some money to Capcom twice, three times, to get VR into Resident Evil with 7 Village and 4. Like, I feel like if they start doing that with other devs, that might be something worth looking into, for sure. But, yeah, I just think, yes, Ewan's right. Like, I don't know how they can, you know, think that things are going to get better just by, like, opening up to PC and that's yeah. it. Like, they definitely have to... Even that last showing, it was just the Metro game. Like, that was, like, pretty much it.
I still think that, like...
Put some respect on that weird fantasy game they showed, please.
Oh, the one where you punch skeletons.
That's right.
I do think that, like, I don't know. This might be a dumb thing to say, but I do think these types of things are, like, marketing plays. Just to be, like, even if you're not going to buy a VR2, like, you'll buy a PS5 just because you might want to play VR. I don't know. Like... Obviously, a lot of work goes into the tech, but yeah. I'm sure that they're probably making money on units, and they just see it as a value add.
I mean, I thought the report this past week, though, was they made something like 2 million units for launch and, like, only sold a quarter of those, so not even. Like,
yeah, I'm not surprised.
You've got to think it's a huge loss. It released loss at
an awful time. Like, if this came out, like, yeah. soon after the PS5, I really think it'd be a different situation. I don't think yeah. it'd be seeing more games. I guess,
like, cost of living being what it is as well, it's hard to justify a near... Well, it's more than the cost of the console to get the VR headset as well.
I think it was also just like a reverse of what happened with PS4. Like, everybody had a PS4, right? Like, that was the one of the biggest install bases with the original VR. So then yeah. to release this device that's like, hey, you don't need to buy anything else, just attach this to your PS4 that you already have. And it was cheaper than the console. Like, it's almost the complete opposite approach that they took with VR2. And I don't know if that paid off. Well, we know it didn't, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it might yet. Maybe they'll have something up their sleeve.
Nothing I think lost, to your point, except for the people that bought one and don't yeah. use it.
Sorry.
Did you get a PSVR 2, Brody? Sorry. I cut you off, James.
You did? I opened it late last year to review Arizona Sunshine 2, so... And then back in the box it went, back under my bed.
It's cool.
It's good. Yeah, it's cool. I definitely like the tech. It's just there's no games that make me want to play it. That said, there was a sale recently where there was a bunch of games on sale, and I bought a few, but I just... Who can be bothered? Like, I just can't be bothered setting it up. It's such a drain. And I've got to pack it up every time I use it.
Cause I know that's like such a
little grubby hands around the house, little kids.
Like, yeah, and like hot, sweaty heads...
Yeah,
you know, stuck in.
I don't know if you can see this, but I am glistening. But
yeah,
but I definitely I bought like that Synapse game, and I really want to play that. But
yeah, me too.
Just can't be bothered.
Not today.
Maybe in winter.
I did really enjoy golf with friends on my Quest 2. That was good fun. What we need is another COVID lockdown. Then I'll play all the VR games.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize what the... did you say golf with friends? I didn't realize that had VR.
Nah, it's not golf with friends. What is it called? Like what, walkabout?
Walkabout, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
It's a lot of good tennis fun. Games.
If you want to play some mini golf games. Together, Birdie, let's
do it. Let's do yeah. it.
That's it. We're all getting PSVR 2s. We're back in.
Like, three of us could literally play mini golf together, like in the real world, but who wants that?
Yeah.
It's true. Anyway... Speaking of things that we want in the real world.
Speaking of who wants that, first details have emerged about Assassin's Creed Infinity. Infinity or Infinite, I'm not sure. I should have checked. And the franchise's future have leaked. So basically, this was revealed a long time ago. Like, I think it was just after Valhalla. I don't know if, I'm pretty sure that Ubisoft revealed that they were going to kind of bring together all of their Assassin's Creed experiences under this singular banner called Infinity, I'm pretty sure. And it's going to be launching with Assassin's Creed Red this year, and we'll obviously start off with content surrounding that game. The idea that is that you'll be able to like boot into to Red from Infinity within seconds, and it's like a big live service offering, which could go either way. But also is kind of tied into the modern day story of the Assassin's Creed games, which I personally love, but I reckon everyone else hates them. So yeah. You can like kind of engage with that as little or as much as you want. On top of all of that, this same report also had details about Hex, which was previously announced with Infinity, as well as Invictus, which I don't think has been announced before. I could be wrong, but that's like a sole multiplayer game that's going to be coming out in 2025. Hex will be about a female protagonist that Ewan is like enamored by, called Elsa. I think that's funny. Thinks it might be a Frozen tie-in, but it will also be the darkest Assassin's Creed game ever. There's also an area which makes me roll my eyes called The Exchange, which is an online store that will have projects for each playable protagonist that will kind of act like mini season passes for each character. Other projects have also been, not announced, but have been leaked to be in development, including a Black Flag remake, a game set across India, the Aztec Empire, and the Mediterranean, a free-to-play four-player PvE game, another multiplayer title, and they're all scheduled to be released in the next 6 years. So, that's obviously, like, a lot. Does this approach to Assassin's Creed excite anybody in particular?
In part.
Yeah, okay.
Some of the projects like Hex obviously sound very interesting. Obviously, we've spoken about them before. Like, they all sound like very different to what we've had before, obviously in scope and otherwise. But the part where I sort of get a little trepidatious, if that's a word, scared, is when I read all these other projects that are supposed to be coming out before 2030, and I worry that there'll be that same oversaturation of Assassin's Creed and just exhaustion from the franchise that I had probably around Black Flag, honestly. Around Black Flag when that first came out, I was just like, I have to get out of this franchise because I've just played one of these every year for like the last 6 or 7 years and I'm just done. So seeing all those different titles, I guess the only thing going for it is that they're all pretty different, like multiplayer, PvE games, like they're for different audiences, clearly. But yeah, I just hope they don't use this platform to barrel towards oversaturation again. So, but Hex and that definitely sound very cool.
Hex is definitely like my most excited. It's done by like Clint Hocking, who did Far Cry 2, Splinter Cell, Chaos Theory, and Watch Dogs Legion. Yeah, I left that till last because that's probably his least successful game. But everything else has been really good. He's a great designer. I think he always does really cool things inside of, as much as he can, I guess, inside of the Ubisoft structure. But I think I believe them when like it says it'll be the darkest game ever. I think he will take it to places that it's never really gone before. But I'm also like really excited for the multiplayer idea because I think if anyone played like Brotherhood's multiplayer or Black Flag's multiplayer, that was such a cool and unique idea. Like it really took that like I guess core social stealth aspect of Assassin's Creed and like put it into multiplayer and made it work really well. Just like kind of like stalking a target through crowds and stuff when it's like another person, but then having that paranoia on yourself. Like I really hope they bring that back in some way. I hope it's not just like ships. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I hope it's actually just like proper Assassin's Creed. I guess, do you think that this will be the end of, say, buying a $99 game every year? Like, I feel like maybe Hex
buy them within the.
Yeah, I feel like no.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sort of imagining this is like going to operate. Because the
alternative
the way...
would be subscription, wouldn't it? And that's probably not quite worth it. It wouldn't have like the turnover in titles like a Game Pass or a PS Plus would.
I guess more what I meant was like, I think with Red and Hex, like those will be like traditional Assassin's Creed games. But I can see like potential for, say, like Nebula, Raid, and Echoes to be these kinds of games that they chuck them into the Infinity platform and then just add shit to them every 3 months or something to tide it over until, like, the next big game.
That's what excites me from memory, because I reported on this initially. Like, a lot of these games were going to be different sized experiences, so, like, they were going to move away from, like, all of them being 100 hours, and, like, Hex might be 10, 15 hours, and the other one that they've announced might be another one. I can't remember any of those other names.
I think Nebula is like something like that. Like that seems to be because it's three separate settings. Like I feel like they could definitely do something smaller with all those.
Excites me more. Like having it all contained in one world that does feel like you can sort of just jump between them. Or if you do want to go back after 6 months, like having it sort of in there with all of your Assassin's Creed games, and hopefully it sort of does feel like one connected universe that's more thought out. Excites me, because I really used to like Assassin's Creed back in the day. I know a lot of people did, but then it just became too much. Like, nobody, like, you weren't even finishing him in the end, James, right? Like, Valhalla, you gave up on, because Valhalla, it was just so long. I don't even understand how you create games that massive, and just why. Like, what is the point of having that much content? It's great, but it's just so much.
Valhalla was, like, well-supported, too. Like, I feel like they were trying to make this a games as a service. Like, there was new shit being added almost every 2 months. But, like, yeah, it, you're right. Like, it was already too big, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And maybe they realized. And then there was that expansion, the Ragnarok thing that came out, too. That was even more on top.
Yeah. I kind of, as ridiculous as Valhalla got, I do hope there is still a place for those bigger titles, because, you know, like, Odyssey is probably one of the best Assassin's Creed games that's come out, right? And I kind of hope that we do still see, like, an RPG as kind of grand in scale as that, without the bloat, I suppose, of Valhalla. But yeah, I'm excited by this. I'm a little bit disappointed. When I heard Infinity, of course, I assumed there was going to be some sort of portal that you connect via USB to your console and some Assassin's Creed plastic figurines that would... I'm a little disappointed that that's not happening, but I'll take it.
Disappointed in that bit, whatever that was.
what I like about it is, like, maybe they can just start with, like, smaller parts of a game, so then add to it over time and keep adding to these games and supporting them, so that you don't start with a 100-hour game. Like, maybe they do go and add certain things to two or three of them that are all related to... I don't even know how this is going to work, like, but you know what I'm saying.
I mean, they could have a game, but do you think that would be... Because you'd more or less be kind of moving to an episodic model then, in a way, right? Like, but then I feel like with the way Assassin's Creed works, you could really have, like, a say, a character that you follow through their whole life or something, and you might 100%. Cut it off at a certain point in their life, and that would be, like, I guess, a plot twist. And here's some other shit to do in the other worlds that we've built while you're waiting. Like, I feel like that could be something cool.
So that it's like, a chapter releases and it actually impacts like two or three games rather than like a massive game dropping at once. I love that idea. I think it works so much better for this series. I worry that the peak of this franchise still has been in the past, and I don't know if it's ever going to get back to those levels. So that'll be interesting to see. I feel like Ubisoft is kind of all in on this. Now, as they should
be. Yeah, I think they are.
Yeah, I would love to see them get experimental with it, though. Like, maybe, you know, different developers kind of feature in this, and you see some of the kind of, like, original style things kind of come in here. Maybe there's, like, a side-scrolling Assassin's Creed game that kind of comes into the mix.
Assassin's Cart.
Don't get ridiculous.
Assassin's Chess.
But yeah, I think Hex sounds really interesting. I think that has a capacity to be a very different Assassin's Creed game. The kind of... My obsession with history has me interested to see what, like, their take on the Aztec Empire would be like. So I'm continually interested in the historical settings of these games, but for them to also kind of do weird and wonderful things, I suppose, with the approach of the overall game design too, I would welcome.
Do we think there's any chance they're going to go in and add, like, Valhalla, Odyssey, and what was the other one I'm missing? Origins? Like, because I don't know, it feels like a shame to just sort of leave them in the past, but maybe they're...
I mean,
totally
they're already...
Different.
I would argue they're already left in the past. Like, nothing's happening with them. They're all... Well, no, like, do you know what I mean?
But
like,
do you know what I mean?
You can,
like,
still play them. But
yeah.
I think this is the closest we're going to get. I don't know if you guys remember when you booted Assassin's Creed 4, and it had that little, like, select your game option, and it was, like, all these different, like, you know, Japan, China, all this shit. And it was, like, really exciting, because everyone thought they were getting, like, you know, this many... Like, this was, like, the future of Assassin's Creed. But I feel like with Assassin's Creed Infinity, like, that's going to be that, but for real. Like, I think that's the potential there. I don't know if anyone remembers that, obviously.
I don't remember that opening at all. You sure you were selecting the language?
No, mate. I'm not. There was pictures. There was, like, pictures of each game. I'm not... Fuck, man. But... So how do we think this leaves Prince of Persia Remake? Do we reckon that's still coming if all the teams are
coming off that? It'll be the showpiece of Assassin's Creed Infinity, I feel.
That'll come in a Happy Meal at this rate.
It's going to come in as, like, Assassin of Persia or something. Just becomes like...
It's a good question, though. Like, who is developing all of these games? Like, if they're all coming out in the next 6 years, like,
Who's doing...
It seems like a hard task.
Who is doing remake? Isn't it like Ubisoft Mumbai or something like that?
It's a mix of Mumbai and Pune.
Yeah, that's right.
P-U-N-E.
So will we ever see it? Probably not.
No, but they've taken it. They've had that project taken off them, and now Montreal's making it, apparently. That was the last update. Which, because
poor Pune. That's,
yeah. We interviewed them. Didn't you interview them, Shannon?
I think so.
Yeah, because that was like their first lead project.
The last they were ever allowed to speak.
Now they're not allowed. Do we think it's been almost 11 years since Black Flag? Is it too soon for a remake of Black Flag? When we've had an Assassin's Creed game every year.
Here we go.
No. We have to ask.
Where we need we a feel? Strict 10-year minimum policy.
I didn't realize the fervor was there for Black Flag. Like I said, it was when I hopped off. I really didn't like it, but
I think everyone considers that the peak, Brody. Yeah, really. Even though, I'm assuming you and I think Brotherhood is the peak.
Yeah, yeah. Revelations is good too, but I fucking just did not like Naval Warfare. I hate it, in fact.
So yeah, it does seem like a supermassive undertaking from Ubisoft, but speaking of supermassive, we'll jump into our next topic, which is about supermassive games, who have wound up this week undergoing extensive reorganization, which has involved the laying off of approximately 90 of its 350 staff members. For people who don't know, like Supermassive, obviously they made Until Dawn, the Dark Pictures games, and then they're doing Little Nightmares 3. I think there's some other stuff in between there that I've forgotten about, but... this is really disappointing news. I always looked forward to playing the Dark Pictures games. Like, they've always been some of my favorites, and I like how they kind of play with all these different tropes and horror and stuff. And I feel like their genre, like their niche, has really been untapped by anybody else. So like, it kind of shocks me a little that they are struggling a bit.
Did they do The Quarry as well, or am I misremembering?
Yes, they did. I was forgetting.
Do you reckon this gives me it's reminding me a little bit of Telltale to a degree, where they sort of put out all these projects and maybe they started to diminish returns. Like, do you think they hired up for was it Dark Pictures? Sorry. I was going to say Little Pictures.
Well, Dark Pictures was once a year.
It still takes a little bit of turnover to put a game out like that.
That was self-published, wasn't it? Or was that the Bandai one?
Bandai Namco, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, do you think they hired up when they sort of committed to putting all those out, and then maybe the return wasn't there for those, and then they've had to sort of look at this restructuring?
They also released a VR2 game, which was like a colossal failure and just didn't work.
Was that the Impatient or whatever it was?
No, this was at launch.
Until Dawn Switchback.
Oh, Switchback.
Yeah, it just like was a failure, so... It's a tough one. To Brody's point, they were doing a lot at one point, like the 2K game, the Bandai games, a bunch of other stuff. So it could just be them being conservative. But yeah, to James's point, like nobody's doing what they're doing. So it is sad when we see these stories.
Yeah, I know they were pretty well received, and there was kind of a fan base for these games, but I never got the impression they did all of that much in the way of numbers, particularly the Dark Pictures anthology.
I think Until Dawn did well.
Until Dawn did well, no doubt. But then that was how long ago now? Like, they've put out a lot of games between now and then. There is a remake coming out.
So it must have been 11 years.
They're not doing it right.
Yeah. I'm fairly sure Supermassive aren't making that.
The Quarry was like $100 from memory, and I remember at the time people, like, anyone would play it, but just not at that price point.
I think that's the thing, because like these games, like especially the Dark Pictures games, because they come out so quickly, they weren't super long, and the idea was that you were meant to replay and see how they end, but realistically, like, the casual audience who would pick this kind of thing up wouldn't do that, like, do you know?
Yeah, and I feel like they were trying to walk like a difficult middle ground, right, where it's kind of a casual sort of horror, and it might have been like perceived as too casual for the horror fans that were otherwise out picking up Resident Evil games, but then maybe kind of still a little too spoopy for people that might like throw a sleepover and play horror games together. Shannon's laughing at me again.
And I think probably there's... I don't know if this is off base, but...
It's a fine line.
I feel like because they make their games so watchable, there's probably a big audience of people who just watch their games on stream, because they also do like a lot of cool stream integration. So there might be like a large audience that have, you know, absorbed their games and taken them in, but haven't bought them at all. Like, they probably just watched their favorite streamer, so that might have shot them in the foot slightly as well.
That's a very good point.
If they're keeping a smaller scope, I still think like 250 staff is like a good amount for a studio, right? Like an indie studio. Like, it's not a small amount. It's a lot of people. So I still think they're going to... I think they're probably just going to be more focused, which I do think they probably needed a little bit of. But yeah, they haven't really put out any bad games apart from the VR one. Yeah, it's probably...
Was that actually bad, or did it just not sell well?
No, it was like, the graphics were awful. Like,
I think people thought it was a PS4 game that was like kind of quickly moved to PS5 VR. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Damn.
Well, that was the
I do hope we get like more games like The Quarry. I should really go back and play... I've maybe played a bit of Man Medan, but none of the others in the Dark Pictures Anthology. And I loved Until Dawn, and I love The Quarry, but... Yeah.
They're good. They are good. Everyone has different feelings about each of them. It reminds me of American Horror Story in a lot of ways, where, like, if you don't really care about that trope, it's not really gonna...
But I love that. Like, everyone has a standalone.
Yeah, I agree. Like, everyone has a favorite, you know? Like, I think that's really cool. But they've still got, like, Little Nightmares 3. They've already announced the sci-fi version, the sci-fi game for Dark Pictures, and then that Frank Stone Dead by Daylight game. Like, they've still got projects coming. True. But, yeah.
I totally, sorry, it's only just now clicking me, like, Little Nightmares was, no, hang on, I'm thinking of something different.
No, they didn't make the first two, they're making this one, is that what you mean?
Right, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yep, the guys who made the first two wanted to do something else, but Namco wanted to keep making Nightmares.
I do like the Little Nightmares games, actually, I'd be curious to see what Supermassive bring to that.
Yeah, co-op, first of all, so that would be cool, but like, I don't know, I think it'll be fine. I think that, yeah. I mean, sometimes these restructures have to happen so they can just make it through, you know?
Yeah. It's obviously rough for the 90 of course, estimated that have lost their role as a result of this. And I hope they land on their feet. I think, like, regardless how you might feel about their games, it's clear there's a lot of talent at the studio. I think the games, for the most part, are really well written. The presentation's always been very strong. Hopefully they all find work soon after.
Agree.
Hmm. Well, Ewan, what day is it today?
Wednesday, when this episode goes out.
Today, but Ewan.
What
today.
Day is it today?
Ewan. Oh, it's Pokemon Day.
It is. Thank you for that. Oh my god. So, it's Pokemon Day as of recording, and when this episode goes live, it'll be in the rest of the world because we're living in the future. So, to mark the occasion, I thought we would go around the room and tell everybody, what does Pokemon mean to us? Ewan, I want to start with you.
As the baby.
Yeah, just start at the bottom.
Does Pokemon mean anything to you at all?
Not much nowadays. Back in the day, as in, like, early 2000s, Ewan, so we're talking, like,
just when you're starting to walk.
Primary school here. Yeah, just as I was starting to walk. I got a Game Boy Advance and I got Pokemon Yellow for that Game Boy Advance, being the pairing that is. And I was probably excited about that because I watched a lot of the show as a kid. But that is the only Pokemon game I've like spent any meaningful time with since.
Didn't you have a good idea for a Pokemon game?
I do.
Do you want to recap that again?
It's basically Power World. I guess that's like where I've arrived at more recently. It's like, and it's well documented on the podcast. So familiar. I apologize if you're familiar with this already, but I just feel it's time for a change in the Pokemon formula. I want to do more in the game rather than going out and collecting the 100 new Pokemon they've dreamt up for this latest iteration. I kind of want Pokemon to get that Breath of the Wild moment. And yeah, I'd like some real-time combat, preferably with heavy machine gun weaponry, that sort of thing. No, like...
Anyway, let's like move around.
You could totally pivot. Like, okay, all you got to do is... Here, I'm Ash, right? I'm serious. Walking around, throw the Pokeball.
Why did you start?
And then you, like, you're... camera pivots to the Pokemon's perspective, and then you like go into kind of a hack and slash brawler. That's all I want.
Sounds great. My touchstone with Pokemon like, obviously I was a young man during the When did it sort of take off? 98, 97, 98, that sort of area?
Let me look really
Probably
quickly.
Around blue, yellow.
98.
1996.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe I caught on.
Oh, no, 98 late. Out of... No, 98, I lied. 98. Okay.
Yeah, so obviously when the show took off on Cheese TV and, you know, the first few games on Game Boy took off, I remember playing that Game Boy in the dark, you know, no backlight on that son of a bitch. Misty beat me. I remember I headbutt my Game Boy and broke the screen. That was a thing that happened. So I had to lay off the Pokemon for a while. But then sort of Gold and Silver happened, and then I never really played it again. And that sort of makes me sad, because it was a really formative part of my my youth. But, it just hasn't really captured me since. I don't know.
Can we not gloss over the story? Are you headbutting the screen?
Like, it was just out of frustration.
How did that happen? You lost the battle and you
I lost the
went,
battle to Missy like, and I just sort of went, and just accidentally headbutted it. Like, I was just thrashing as I was laying
accidental.
Down. No, like, I don't go around headbutting things for fun. Not anymore. I don't know. Just a little burst of frustration that led me to... Obviously, it cracked the screen and all the ink went everywhere inside the screen. I didn't get an inky forehead or anything, but yeah, that was me breaking my Game Boy.
How did you explain that to your parents?
My mum didn't really know or mind. I don't know. I don't even know how I got another one. I can't remember. I've repressed all that. Anyway, what does Pokemon mean to you guys? Not all at once. Shit.
Yeah, similar. I feel like we're all going to have similar stories, but yeah.
Did you headbutt a Game Boy too?
No, I did not. There's so much I would say, but I won't. I was 6 or 7. I remember playing it very naughty, but I remember I did own it, but I remember emulating it with my cousins, like whenever we were on holidays or whatever, and together we'd emulate a version on a computer. My first console that was mine was the yellow Game Boy Color, the Pokemon Game Boy Color that I played a lot of games on, including, I think, yellow at the time. Went onto the GBA version. That was the first console I ever bought with my own money, and then kind of fell off it, really. Pokemon Snap, played Stadium. Just as we move through generations, I've never gone back. I've tried to several times, but just can't. Like, I played a lot of Let's Go, so I'd love to see another one of those for the GBA games. But I don't know. I hope one day I could go back, because obviously spent a lot of hours with those games. And it did provide, like, a sense of wonder and, like, exploration that you just didn't find at that time. But, yeah, I would like to see it evolve. I think there's a lot of untapped potential there that they could be doing more with.
Now, I'd say this has all been pretty negative so far. So, James, as this is a celebration of Pokemon, you probably need to bring this home.
Pokemon to me, like, has always been a social... Like, it was always a social thing. Like, I kind of... At school, because I obviously went to school before the internet was, like, huge. So, like, you could just... The only way to get other Pokemon you wanted was literally to talk to people. So you had to go and say, like, have you got, like, you know, Pokemon Red, I've got Blue, do you want this Pokemon, whatever. And, like, this whole trading thing... So many rumors around the internet, not the internet, magazines and stuff. Where,
do you remember, Cerebi.net?
Yeah, well, that's still around.
Shit.
So he's still running it. Yeah.
And calling up those, like, $3 a minute chat lines.
Yeah, to get, like,
racking up some bills with those.
And there was, like, all these rumors about how to get Pika Blue, because, like, pictures came out from Japan of the next game, but everyone assumed this new Pokemon was Pika Blue, but it wasn't. It was something else.
Do you remember, like, the Missing No craze?
Yep. I remember all of it. Like, and then... You know, you'd finish your Pokedex and think you've got everything, and then you could go to the shopping center and download Mew onto your cartridge, like you give it to them. Or you could take photos in Pokemon Snap and take them to a Blockbuster and print them out. Like, that was all really cool shit. And you would, like, center your, like, social stuff around that. Like, we'd go out on the weekend to go and do all of our photos from Pokemon Snap. Like, it was really cool.
I remember when the movie came out and you could go and get those, like, collector's cards, like the Mewtwo cards.
That
was sick.
So that, like,
still
to me...
Still got somewhere.
It also made me, like, much less trusting of people, because there were, like, all these stories at school about how a kid would trade, like, a Charizard card for his Game Boy. So, like, I'd always be way more wary to trade things.
That was Yu-Gi-Oh! For me.
Yeah.
Do you want to know another patent Gibbo Pokemon story?
Yes.
What else did you have?
So, I'm not real proud of this, but I remember when Pokemon cards were, like, kicking around school, I made my own Pokemon card. And, like, made it like a shiny with like tin foil and stuff like that. It looked absolute garbage. And then I don't remember if this guy willingly traded it to me, or maybe I peer pressured him to trade me it, but I got a legitimate Blastoise out of it. So he's got a unique one of a kind Brody Pokemon card somewhere, and I got a Blastoise out of him. So
again, yeah. I've got to dig deeper. So how much effort did you go into fabricating this card?
I put the time in.
Okay.
Yeah, like
I think I laminated the card,
then I put the foil on it first, and then I like had the picture and I cut out around the picture, so it was like foily behind it and stuff. I think it looked pretty shit. But yeah. You know, I tried. I put in the effort.
What Pokemon was it? Do you remember?
I don't even remember. Oh. I want to say in my gut that it was like a Scyther. Like, because I thought Scyther was the shit. I thought Scyther was cool.
He was pretty cool.
Yeah. So I think that's what I did. I think I did a shiny Scyther. And I think he did well.
If you still have that card, please hit us up. Like,
if you're out there, one, I'm sorry. And two, I'd like to buy it back. So please let me buy my Scyther back.
I'm sure it's gone up in value.
Trade your Blastoise.
But yeah, like that's my more positive spin on it. I think all of the social experiences that it brought were really cool. And I feel like moving to online now, you definitely lose that a little bit. You can just kind of look for the Pokemon you want online and just get it that way. Kids these days, they don't know what they've missed out on.
Pokemon has done a very good job of staying relevant to children.
It has, considering.
Yeah. Like, Pokemon Go was wild.
For a time, that was crazy.
Like, I was walking like 10Ks a day. Like, and I would never do that now. Never. Like, I remember, like, seeing, like, you know how, like, a gym would move position just down the road? Like, I'd see all these cars, like, parked at the park, and they'd, like, be backing out, like, and I saw a car, like, pull out into another car, because they were trying to move down to, like, get to the other park, and I was just like, man, nuts. What a time.
I once participated in a Pokemon Snap race. That was fun. Speed running through the game. But there was like...
It's on rails.
You're on rails. What do you mean? It's the same speed.
Yeah, but there was like tricks and exploits that like you could use to kind of move quicker. And yeah, if you miss something, you'd obviously lose time, that sort of thing.
So you know like Pokemon Snap hacks for like speed racing.
Well, so here's the thing. I didn't know it. I was like paired up with the expert in Pokemon Snap and he played through it first. Finished the game, restarted it, and then coached me through it, and we still beat the other team. It was pretty nuts.
Where's the trophy? Show us the trophy.
It's with all of James's What the Wiki trophies.
Anyway, so yeah, Pokemon, I used to love it. Kind of wish it would change it up itself at some point. But yeah.
What do you mean, I don't think you need to do that, but...
Yeah. Anyway, also, obviously, the rapid fire question is also kind of a disclaimer to say that we are recording this before the Pokemon Presents that is happening tonight. So, in the spirit of that, and to see how right or wrong we are, what are we hoping to have announced?
So, what I want to see happen, right, is the camera pivot to the Pokemon, and then it becomes, like, a hack-and-slash brawler type of thing. It's just, like, it just needs to copy what Final Fantasy done, right? Like, make it a party thing, bit of real-time combat if you want to kind of go all strategic with some... That's all it needs to be.
Has that Pokemon teeth-brushing thing come out yet?
I don't know. I think it has.
Oh. Maybe an update for that or something. That'd be cool.
What do I even Google for that? Pokemon teeth?
I think
it did come out, I think.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I think it might be that.
It did, yeah.
Pokemon brush.
Yeah.
Pokemon smile. Yes, of course. Yeah, it's out. It's out.
Oh, well, shit.
Why are we not doing this?
Let's go Johto.
Do you think you're going to get that in your 10-minute presents?
I think we're going to get Pokemon Cafe Remix updates, Pokemon Unite updates, and Pokemon Masters EX updates, and that's it. All the mobile games. But I agree with Shannon. I think it's well and truly time for a new Let's Go. You know, these kind of simplified Pokemon Go-esque remakes of the old games. And, yeah, they need to make it happen. We'll see.
Lovely.
I'm downloading Pokemon Smile now.
It's really good, Ewan. I'm really glad. Speaking of smiling, everyone smiles at the end of every episode of the Pressed Up Podcast because we play What the Wiki, which is the Pressed Up Podcast game show where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game and the contestants must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess and the round ends after one person scores 2 points. As last week's winner, I am in the hosting chair and the current scoreboard is James, as in me, on 10, Brody on 6, Shannon on 4, Kieran and Ewan together sitting in a tree on 3, and Harry on nil pois. So, are we all ready?
Always. Hell yeah.
Yeah, cool. I'm glad. This is a random assortment of games. I don't think there's a theme.
Do they come from a mysterious benefactor?
They do, but it's boring.
No. Ewan, is it Ape Escape?
I did ask someone else, but it's no one anyone knows. Okay, Rise, are we ready?
Son of Rome.
Are we ready? Shut up. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Shannon.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, good. Ewan, you need to listen. You need to get further up the scoreboard.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Oh, shit.
Okay. The producer of the game stated that they wanted to keep the game closer to the second. The battles in this game begin with a short pre-fight intro, a small cinematic dialogue sequence that varies depending on the player's chosen character. A new system called Focus Attacks has been introduced, as well as Ultra Moves. Someone is Googling, and I feel like you're cheating.
Sorry, go. No, I'm not.
The traditional six-button control scheme returns with new features and special moves. The game has a similar feel to the second game, but also includes a few features from the third. The game is a 2.5D fighting game published...
Shannon.
Yes, Shannon.
Street Fighter 4.
It is Street Fighter 4. Congratulations. Wow.
Thank you.
I just kind of arrived there by the time Shannon said it.
The train pulled into the station.
Okay. Shannon won, everyone else none. The game is an action-adventure game in which the player controls Dante and engages in fast-paced combat, platforming, and environment.
Shannon.
Yes, Shannon.
She's taking the
DMC.
I'm not reacting until you tell me if the your answer or not.
4. No, DMC is my answer.
Okay, no, it's not DMC. In the game, Dante's primary weapon is a scythe that can be used in a series of combination attacks and finishing moves. He also has a Holy Cross that fires a volley of energy as a projectile attack. Quick time events are used when attempting to discharge demons and during boss fights.
Sorry, can we pause for 2 seconds? I cut out for like 35 seconds. So what did Shannon guess?
That's unfortunate.
He guessed DMC.
As in the remake.
But then also kind of DMC4, I'm not really sure.
He said DMC, so I guess, yeah. If he said...
I'm going to take a punt.
Okay, Ewan, go.
Dante's Inferno.
It is Dante's Inferno.
Trick
Normally
question.
I remove the names.
I didn't
think
it'd be that obvious, but...
Yeah. I was like, they'll think I'm doing Capcom, and they did. Are we ready? I'm scared now. I don't know, I've only got this game left. The game's classification refusal, as well as other recent games such as Fallout 3 and Aliens vs. Predator, reignited debate over the prohibition of sale and exhibition of video games for mature audiences in Australia.
Shannon.
Yes, Shannon.
Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
No, I'm sorry, it's not. The game is a first-person shooter with heavy emphasis on cooperative gameplay. The game presents 5 new campaigns composed of 3 to 5 smaller levels. As in the first game, each campaign is presented in menus and loading screens as a film starring the 4. Yes, Brody.
Oh, no, you've put me off now. I was going to say Aliens vs. Predator.
No, it's not. Everyone's back in, by the way. Upon completing a campaign... Yes, Shannon. Okay. Is that your answer? The face?
Manhunt 2.
No.
I don't know. I thought, no.
Upon completing a compared faux credits screen, which acts as the final scoreboard for players. In every campaign, most levels involve the survivors attempting to reach a safe room and close the door once inside.
Ewan.
Yes, Ewan.
Is this Left 4 Dead 2?
It is Left 4 Dead 2, Ewan. Congratulations. Who would have thought?
Huge.
huge.
My internet betrayed me.
Well, everyone can breathe a sigh of relief.
3 minutes.
You're all still in the running, because Ewan won't get further up than that. But congrats, Ewan. You got the points for today.
Thank you. That's such like a backhanded compliment, but I appreciate it.
Better than nothing, I think.
Still a compliment, I guess.
So with that, let us bring an end to this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at PressStartAU and visit the site at pressstart.com.au. We've been joined today by Brody.
Thank you. You can follow me on most things at Brody_DG.
Shannon.
You can follow me at Shannon Grixty on everything that your heart desires and more.
OnlyFans included.
Soon.
And taking home the points, Stuart.
And I thank you. You can follow me on social. I just launched into my usual outro. You can follow me on socials at @Ewan_Roxburgh.
And I've been your host, James, and you can follow me on my socials at @JamesATJMZ. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next week, happy gaming.
Bye.
The notes say next year.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I just never changed it since, like, last year.
Well, bye, everyone.
Bye.